Policy, February 21st, open. And we're going to go out of order because there are a couple bills that are waiting for, or one bill that's waiting for amendments. Plus, so we'd like to start with...
I think he's here.
Grand entrance, Senate Bill 460, if that would be all right. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 460. Oh, also, we're going to be in a subcommittee since we don't have a quorum.
Oops, well.
We're going to have full committee because we're now out of subcommittee. Okay, are you going to describe the bill or should I have Mr. Bacobian describe the bill?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Senate Bill 460 basically allows clinical nurse specialists to prescribe prescription drugs. In the bill itself, it does a number of things in its prescriptive authority. It does prohibit civil action against or civil damages against a school administrator or a teacher who administers a medication under instructions from a clinical nurse specialist or CNS. Add CNS to the list of health care providers who, when providing uncompensated services, cannot be held liable for injury, death, or other loss from providing these services. It does authorize the CNS to prescribe drugs within a formulary, requires the State Board of Nursing to establish rules for the application process, and eliminates requirements that the board give the notice to the State Board of Pharmacy regarding the application of a certified nurse practitioner to dispense prescription drugs. It eliminates other requirements such as showing evidence of training specific to the nurse practitioner. Eliminates requirement that the nurses board adopt rules regarding package and record-keeping inspections related to drug dispensing. Reports that the board reported the 74th Legislative Assembly on implementation of the program. In short, clinical nurse specialists are licensed by the board and usually work within three areas, individual client populations, number two, multidisciplinary teams, or within organizations such as clinics or hospitals. The CNS certification program was enacted in the mid-2001. And the board reports there are currently 152 licensed CNS in the state. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon. My name is Sue Davidson. I'm a clinical nurse specialist, and I work for Oregon Nurses Association as the Assistant Executive Director for Practice Education and Research. Thank you for enabling me as a CNS and others to speak to you today about Senate Bill 460. I would also like to thank Senators Richard Devlin, Brown, Metzger, Morissette, Nelson, and then Representative Monis Anderson for your support of Senate Bill 709 in 2003, which continues in this bill, Senate Bill 460. Actually, 460, a bill to provide statutory authority to the board so that CNSs may prescribe and dispense, has had a previous life as Senate Bill 709 be engrossed in 2003 legislative session. In that session, Senate Bill 708 provided emergency dispensing authority to nurse practitioners, and Senate Bill 709 for CNSs provided the same prescribing authority that nurse practitioners had, and in addition, emergency dispensing authority. After reaching agreement with the Oregon Pharmacy Association, both bills were voted off the Senate floor with 28 positive yay votes. Both bills were sent to the House rules, at which time Oregon Medical Association came into the story with opposition. After additional amendments to satisfy OMA, Senate Bill 708, the nurse practitioner version, was sent to the House floor where it passed without opposition. Senate Bill 709 had the same amendments, but OMA continued to oppose the bill. And on the last day of the 2003 session, the Rules Committee passed Senate Bill 709 to the House floor. Unfortunately, it got caught up again in political machinations that happen in the Rules Committee as session is ending. And the outcome was it didn't reach the floor before the legislative session ended. We are bringing this bill back in with the same provisions as when the 2003 session ended. And I would like to ask Chairman's permission to have three clinical specialists briefly tell you why this bill is so important to them and to their practices, CNSs. May I do so now?
The bill should pass.
Madam Chair and members of committee, my name is Ann Bush. I've been a liver transplant clinical nurse specialist for 10 years at the Portland VA Medical Center. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 460, which would allow us to prescribe medications. I have a master's degree in as an advanced practice nurse in medical surgical nursing. A large part of my role is in direct patient care with patients in the hospital and in the clinic. Not having prescriptive authority is a barrier to appropriate patient care, even though I work closely with physicians and physically we are in close proximity and within the buildings. So let me give you some recent examples. In the inpatient setting, my liver transplant patient population is very prone to seizures, and these are due to medications that we have them on. One way to minimize the risk is to make sure the magnesium level is normal. Therefore, we closely monitor the magnesium level, and if it needs to be replaced, it is replaced. So when rounding on my patients recently in the morning, it was noted that one of my patients had a very dangerously low magnesium level. And it's very obvious that the patient needed that replacement, but I could not do that. So I had to find a physician colleague, wait till he finished the procedure, explain the situation to him, and then he needed to order the magnesium. So this was a delay in the order, which then delayed the treatment because the pharmacist still needs to make up the solution. The medicine needs to come to the unit so the nurse can give it, and then it takes a few hours to instill, to infuse. So then the patient, again, is more at risk for these seizures during that period of time. Another example in the clinic setting is that I saw a patient for his routine post-op care and diagnosed that he had cellulitis, which is an infection around his incision. He needed an antibiotic, but I cannot order that, so it needed to be ordered. My physician team were all in the OR. Unfortunately, they were doing a liver transplant, but unfortunately, it was a difficult one, and so I could not interrupt the case to get that order. So the patient had to wait several hours in clinic so I could get that order for an antibiotic. Thirdly, as an example, in the short stay care unit, a post-transplant patient of mine was having a procedure, was having pain. The nurse called me with his vital signs and his pain reading, but I couldn't order anything for pain. So then again, I had to find a physician colleague to explain the situation, and then he had to order that medication for pain. These are three recent scenarios, but similar instances occur routinely. As you can see, timely access to care often does not occur, even though my physicians are, again, usually generally accessible. So what of patients who are cared for by clinical nurse specialists in more remote areas? Prescriptive authority is essential to some clinical nurse specialists so that our patients can have timely access to care, access to specialty knowledge, and cost-efficient care. I urge you to support Senate Bill 460. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Diane Cockburn. I'm a clinical nurse specialist in oncology and pain management. I work at Salem Hospital just down the street. I've worked in that role for about 12 years, and it's a challenging one to deal with end-of-life care. These patients often need an array of different medications to manage their symptoms, and especially narcotic pain medications, so we do need Schedule II as well as regular legend drugs permission for. And a couple of examples that I've had recently is I was asked to go to the ICU to see a terminally ill patient who had not yet made the choice to be off the ventilator for symptom management, one being pain management out of control. While there, I went in the morning and made some suggestions to the staff, but they couldn't make any of those changes until the physician had come in to see the patient, which was later in the afternoon after office rounds. So that was about 4 to 6 hours that patient had to suffer needlessly because I can't prescribe. In the outpatient setting, one of the challenges I have is dealing with patients who've been asked to come see me for recommendations on pain and symptom management. It often requires then a second copay and a second office visit with another physician to have them write the prescriptions for the medicine that I knew how to do for the patient. Because this has been so frustrating to me, 2 years ago I went back to school to get my nurse practitioner. Basically just to get the initials at the end so I could prescribe the medications I already knew how to prescribe for these patients. Unfortunately, still in practice, that's not allowed because the CNSs can't prescribe medication yet. They have the knowledge. They're a master's prepared nurse, just as nurse practitioners are. They're agreeing to the same kind of education and the same kind of rules through the Oregon State Board of Nursing. This means so much to patients in time and money. In suffering, if we can prescribe these medications for them in a timely fashion. And I'm for Senate Bill 460, and I hope you will be too. Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jackie Corey. I am a clinical nurse specialist. I work in Springfield, Oregon. My current practice involves clinical outcomes research, staff and patient education, and quality improvement. And although my current position would not necessitate myself having prescriptive authority, I look at my colleagues who are providing direct patient care and see the need wholeheartedly, hence came to speak with you today. I'm really concerned at the amount of time, as you've heard from my colleagues, that my fellow clinical nurse specialists are spending on the telephone and at a fax machine when they are trying to arrange and coordinate care for their patients because they cannot prescribe medications. I don't see it as a good use of my colleagues' time, as a good use of the physician's time that they're trying to contact, and most importantly, I don't see that as giving good patient care. It results in delays and frustration, and I think fragmentation of care. Part of my job is looking at readmissions to our hospital and studying clinical outcomes, as I mentioned earlier, and I see many, I think, opportunities if we were able to get the right care at the right time by the right person for that patient, we would probably be able to alleviate some of that problem. I work with a wound ostomy incontinence nurse who spends a lot of time, again, at the fax machine and on the phone, and I can't tell you the number of times the physician will say back to her, so what do we need to do here? And I know from my other colleagues this happens as well. So again, I don't see it as good use of time. We could be providing direct patient care versus doing that. In conclusion, I believe that if we pass Senate Bill 460, our fellow Oregonians will have improved access to care in the appropriate setting, and I think improvement in quality and cost containment. I support Senate Bill 460 and ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Sherry,
Madam Chair, we just want to summarize for you what is the difference between Senate Bill 709 being engrossed and Senate Bill 460. There are two differences. One of them is that in Senate Bill 709 being engrossed, there's a Section 5A that is not included in 460, and we strongly urge you to include that section. I don't have it right in front of me here. I did in a moment ago, but it is a section that sort of sets up that the clinical nurse specialist will prescribe and dispense. The other difference is that Senate Bill 460 needs Section 6, which in the current bill is bracketed in an italic as if it were to be omitted. We believe that section needs to be included because it includes all of those sort of specific rules around dispensing that were included in the nurse practitioner bill, but we're going to get taken out for one reason we don't know.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
Yes. Thank you very much for your time and listening to us. We appreciate talking with you. We hope that you will give a due pass to Senate Bill.
Sherry Askin? Question.
I was looking at this part that was being omitted, and Senator Cruz called that to my attention. Now, we are getting an amendment that will restore that. Is that correct? Okay.
For the record, my name is Martin Taylor, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. Senator Moss Anderson, members of the committee. We do have an amendment that has been requested for this bill. I think we put the request in about 2 weeks ago, and it would restore 709 be engrossed in exactly the form that we left it last session in 2003 and replace the language you're looking at. So that should answer the problem that you've addressed and any concerns that are brought forward. It's our hope that this bill does not move without that amendment, so hopefully it arrives soon.
Sherry Atherton and Chris Moore, if you both would. No Sherry Atherton, no Chris Moore. That's all right. Kelly Goodrow? Okay.
This may be quicker than you thought.
Tom Holt.
Chair Moss Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt. I'm executive director of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. To speak to the issue that just came up, we have agreed to, at least conceptually, as none of us have seen it at this point, the amendment that Martin spoke to that would substantially restore the language in the bill under Section 6 that's now printed as deleted language. That reflects agreements that we had last session with the Nurses Association as the bill came out of the Senate, and with when that amendment comes back, we'll be neutral on the bill. But I would like to make a couple other comments just related to the general subject. Our observation is that over time, the legislature has tended to grant prescribing authority to a variety of ancillary practitioners of varying degrees of education and experience. The clinical nurse specialists certainly fit within the range of those who already have prescribing authority from our perspective in terms of education, such as nurse practitioners and physician assistants. But this expansion over time has raised an issue for our members of kind of becoming the prescription police, so to speak, of having to see if who, when they get a prescription, is it from someone who's authorized to prescribe, and then what is their scope of prescribing authority and sorting that out. What our suggestion would be, not and certainly not to hold up this bill, this with amendments is fine with us, but we do think it would be appropriate at some point for the legislature to take a broader look at prescribing authority and who has it and who should have it in a broader context, and maybe approach this issue a little bit more strategically. Already in this session you have at least two bills with some prescribing authority, and perhaps more are coming. And I have to note, out of our own self-interest, that pharmacists amongst the various ancillary practitioners are the medication specialists and probably have more training in drugs and how they're used in the body than anybody else, but we don't have any prescribing authority at this point, say, for what pharmacists are allowed to do in immunizations. And every state surrounding us does have some form of prescriptive authority for pharmacists. Now, we don't have a bill to do that, but we think it's an issue that you may want to look at in a broader context as you look at the whole prescribing issue. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Was that a may I?
Yes, Senator Moore.
Was that a commercial?
That was a paid announcement.
Oh, thank you.
All right. I see no further people to testify on this. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 460, and I will open a public hearing on, which, let's see, on 458. And we have no one is here to testify. Do you want to describe the bill?
Thank you, Senator. This bill was heard on the 14th of February and basically requires the Board of Dentistry to accept the results of regional testing agencies or other state clinical board examinations for requirements of licensure. And does remove 35 hours, the requirement of 3,500 hours practice in the preceding application to practice dentistry in Oregon.
All right. Discussing. Well, since no one's here to testify, I'm going to close the public hearing on 458, and I'm going to open a work session on 458.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cruz.
I move Senate Bill 458 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 458 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Hearing none, clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
Excused.
Senator Portney?
Excused.
Senator Dykstra Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morrison?
Aye.
And Chair Montana?
Aye. Senate Bill 458 has passed with a due pass recommendation. Senator Morissette, would you like to carry this?
Seeing how I just came from a dentist appointment, and I want to make points with my dentist, so I'll carry this.
All right. Senate Bill 458 will be carried by Senator Morissette, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 458. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 450.
It's a good bill.
And we have Martin Taylor.
Yes, good bill.
Again, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm representing the Oregon Nurses Association and AORN, which is the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses. Chair Moss Anderson, members of the committee, we had a hearing on Senate Bill 450. This is a bill that would require a circulating RN in operating room surgical procedures. It's intended to ensure that Oregon maintain the quality of care that it's accustomed to. Just to give you a quick review of the problem, federal regulations allow a non-RN to perform a circulating function in operating procedures. An RN is more qualified to do that role and is the practice of Oregon hospitals to have an RN circulator, but we are concerned that this will be a place where we'll experience de-skilling in the operating room, either at the hospital or the ambulatory surgical level. And RN provides you more security for the patient, prevents wrong-site surgeries, ensures that the patient's needs are being watched after, while those involved in the surgical procedure can focus on the body part of organ that is being worked on. At our hearing, a number of questions were raised, and it was proposed that we move to a work group to examine some amendments. We went through that work group process. The chair convened ourselves, the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Hospital Association. And based on that, we've put forward some amendments that we think resolve a majority of the questions raised by you and in that work group. There may be some places that we simply don't agree with some of the other folks on what those amendments might look like, and I'm sure we'll explore that in today's public hearing. And I'd also like to thank the surgical technologists who testified in favor of this bill at the last hearing, and I think that it's relevant to the conversation that the folks who would otherwise be used as a circulator would also say that in the ideal world that is an RN. Let me just go over some of the problems that were addressed, and I'm referring to the Dash 1 amendments that should be in front of you. Yes? The Dash 1 amendments intend to address these things. First, You had some questions as to who is experienced, and that became a little bit of a bog in this bill that we decided was an unnecessary bog, and that currently, under a nurse's license, she must be experienced in order to perform. If she felt that she wasn't qualified, she could inform a hospital that she wasn't qualified, and they would have an obligation to not have a nurse who was not qualified to operate as an RN circulator, to not require her to do so. This, in our opinion, is working well in the state of Oregon. You don't need a statutory, you don't even need the word experienced in the bill. This is handled through the Board of Nursing. Second, there was some concern over the word managing, as if that could invoke a labor management relationship in the bill. That wasn't our intention. We replaced the word managing with the word coordinating. Third, there was some question as to the need for an RN to be present for the duration of a surgical procedure. You'll notice that this attempts to get at that in lines 7 through 14, where it would say that an RN must be present in the surgical procedure unless it becomes necessary for a member of the surgical team to leave the operating room as part of that procedure. So if the nurse needs to leave the room to get materials, to drop off samples, to pick up records, any of the number of reasons expressed for why that would need to happen, that in fact was the most relevant concern of the bill last hearing. That is in fact something an RN circulator ought to do because she's the one person outside the sterile field, so that would be her responsibility. We've made that clear in the bill now. We've also made clear that while assigned to a surgical procedure, an RN circulator can't be assigned to a second procedure. And we've made clear that if the procedure is long and for some reason she needs to be relieved, that it's not a specific person that has to be there the entire time. It's a role of the RN circulator. So the last lines, 12 through 14, allows an RN circulator to be relieved by another RN circulator. The last question in the bill is the trickiest, which is what exactly is a surgical procedure? I'll be honest with you, the national level, there are some concerns about making exceptions in operating rooms at all for surgical procedures because it is a belief that the operating room is for major surgeries. But we have been informed that in Oregon and some ambulatory centers and some small rural hospitals, minor procedures are performed in operating rooms. And since this bill regulates operating rooms, at the direction of the chair and this committee, we are drawing a line. And the line in the Dash 1 amendments is essentially to say that when a surgical procedure is of a minor nature and routinely performed in a physician's office, a circulating nurse wouldn't necessarily have to perform in that procedure. Now, it has been pointed out to me that in our Dash 1 amendments, there's actually five words that undermine our own bill. I'd like to identify those for you. It's performed in line 6, it says, performed by a physician's office or an ambulatory surgical center, which would appear to exempt ambulatory surgical centers from this bill, and that was not our intention in these amendments. So I would respectfully suggest that we would like to amend our own amendment to take those five words out. This amendment is intended to allow facilities that use their operating room for minor procedures the latitude to continue to do that and would be put to a rules process to define those surgical procedures of a minor nature that are routinely performed in a physician's office.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Martin, while you're messing with your own amendment here, I would question in line 5 of the dash ones where it says routinely, I'm wondering if it should be, and this is just a suggestion, is minor in nature and may be performed rather than routinely, because routinely, you know, you get into rural hospital settings, then routinely takes on a different, you see what I'm getting at here? Right. I mean, it's just, I'm just wondering if that puts us in another box for small rural hospitals by saying routinely rather than maybe.
I hear you saying, for me, the word routinely implies that it's a procedure, that it wouldn't just be one physician that does that in their office, but that it would be a norm, that would be the typical setting where that procedure would be performed. That for that procedure, it would typically be a physician's office that would perform, or that procedure would be performed. As opposed to May, which is much more permissive, it basically would leave it leave it very open to physicians to interpret for themselves what they can and can't do in a physician's office, which is fine for the physician in their office, but this is really regulating the operating room. So we're trying to say, where is that line for the use of the operating room?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't think that change would allow physicians to do heart surgery in their office, but you spoke to earlier about the fact that there's kind of a national standard, and we're looking at Oregon as being different because of all of our small rural hospitals, and I'm looking at this. I mean, it is routinely defined in Portland, and does that work in John Day sort of thing? So I'm just trying to make sure that the sort of flexibility you are going for is going to be transferred into the standard we set in the state too.
In this case, I think the word routinely is like the word typically. That would be a place that this kind of procedure would be ordinary to see the procedure done in a physician's office.
Senator Morissette?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can't you define the word routinely above in the statute?
You could also do so by rule, which is what will happen if you move these.
Well, amendments. I mean, I understand the discussion over using different words and the implications, but I think it's common to define a word in statute that you use, and I think that would perhaps solve the problem, because may is permissive. Routinely, it describes something that goes on all the time. Mm-hmm. I can understand that being a desired word, but without defining it, then it may cause a problem. May I ask another question?
Yes, please.
Okay. I've kind of lost the big picture of why we're doing this. Could you tell us one more time the...
This entire problem of how to protect the RN circulator role is really initiated in 96 when a federal standard was created that allowed non-RNs to do the circulating function.
Okay.
And while the standard of care in Oregon has been to use an RN circulator at our hospitals, mm-hmm. While that is a norm for a standard of care, it's recognized nationally, it is not practiced in all facilities around the country. And so the effort in Oregon and other states is to address this before it becomes a problem. And it's a reasonable thing to do. If we address it before it's a problem, then there isn't a fiscal impact on our hospitals for using an RN circulator. It's what they're currently doing. If we wait until they start using non-RNs, then all of a sudden this bill has a fiscal impact on them. We would much prefer to handle this before a problem exists, and while the consequences of the bill are negligible on our hospitals.
Thank you.
All right. We are not going to have the amendments for today, then?
I am comfortable with 450-1 if those five words are removed, and I don't know with the latitude as the chair that you would be comfortable doing that. There are other amendments that have been suggested, but they're not here, and this is a version that I would be comfortable and would encourage you to move with those five words change, if that's possible.
Can we decide? Are you going to...
Madam Chair,
Senator Cruz,
I had the gavel in the House, I was obviously known for conceptual amendments, but this early in the session, I'd rather see the real amendment before I vote on it, even if it's a removal. Your discretion, Madam Chair, but conceptuals are something that one might consider when, you know, in time crunches. I'm not sure we are yet, but
okay, we're going to stand at ease for a second. And the committee is not comfortable with conceptual amendments, we can...
You didn't ask us.
The committee is not in favor of conceptual
amendments. Well, can I ask
you
a question?
Yeah.
Would you be comfortable passing it the way it is?
To be honest, if we took ambulatory surgical centers out of the bill and that got back to the folks that I work for, they would probably, you know, make my life more miserable than it would be worth. So I would have to say my poor miserable life is worth enough to me that I'm going to say that probably won't work. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if we have amendments back by Wednesday, we will hear this Wednesday. If not, we will hear it in Friday. We have a meeting in Gresham,
okay,
committee meeting. So it'll be done this week whenever we, yes.
And I would advise that every single person who has an interest in this bill show up, because you don't know what's going to happen next time.
All right. I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 450. Is there any other agenda? Okay. All right. Committee, we do have Friday our first out-of-district or in-district committee meeting. It'll be in Gresham at the Allied Health Center of Mount Hood Community College. We will be talking about healthcare workforce shortage issues, nursing shortage, et cetera. We have some great testimony, and I'm looking forward to it. I have a handout here. You want to go ahead? We'd like you to be there at noon because they're planning a lunch for us, and the hearing starts at 1:30. It's located in Gresham on Civic Drive, which is right in the middle of where the Gresham Station is, a big shopping center.
Doesn't mean anything to me.
Take Max out there, and they'll drop you off at the city, right at the spot.
That's right. Max is right there. Okay, any other information for the good of the order? If not, committee adjourned.